From the Rosenkranz Foundation and NPR, this is Intelligence Squared U.S., where Oxford-style debating comes stateside and takes on the burning issues of the day. I am John Donvan, your host and moderator for Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. We have six panelists for and against the motion. The motion in this debate is universal health coverage should be the federal government's responsibility. We're going to poll you both before and after the debate because the point here is to win the room. These debaters are trying to persuade you to their point of view. Everyone comes in here with a point of view or the absence of a point of view known as undecided. So in a short time, we'll have the results to share with you, but we want to begin now with the opening statements. Once again, our topic, universal health coverage, should be the federal government's responsibility. And arguing first for the motion, Paul Krugman, a well-known op-ed columnist for the New York Times. And I want to point out that in an era when many of us were beginning to refer to our potatoes as freedom fries, Paul Krugman stood up and talked about the French when it comes to health care in some ways doing it better than the United States. Paul Krugman, the podium is yours.
I'm an economist, which means I'm supposed to talk about efficiency. But I actually want to start by talking about morality. As we sit here, there are several million people in the Houston metropolitan area who are without electricity or running water. They've been hit by disaster. They didn't do anything wrong. So they stayed in their houses because that was what they were advised by the governor of Texas to do. It was the right thing to do, given the impossibility of evacuating a city that size. And now a lot of them are in trouble. Some of them can manage. Some of them can now go and stay with relatives. Some are in good health. And others are not. They're in a lot of trouble. Now, do we think that the people who are in trouble, who are elderly, who are in poor health, who just don't have the financial resources, whatever, to get themselves out of that situation, do we believe that, well, look, you know, it's not a government responsibility to help them. They should be left on their own. Well, of course we don't. I mean, I imagine there are some people who do believe that, but not many. Now imagine some American who is in poor health and can't afford medical care. Do we believe that that's their problem? Well, I would submit to you that actually as a nation, we don't believe that it's appropriate to leave these people on their own. And in fact, by and large, if you ask people, should people have health coverage in this country? Should people be guaranteed health care? Most polls I've seen say that a heavy majority of the public thinks that they should. So then the question would be, well, how is it that we don't actually have that? And the answer is, of course, that we're told, well, actually we're told two things. We're told, first of all, that we already do it, that we already take care of everybody. But the other argument is that it's impossible, that if you try to have some form of universal health care, it'll be terrible. It'll be lousy quality. It'll be wildly expensive. And so people are told that, you know, a government insurance system can't possibly work. But, you know, there's a secret. There's this program called Medicare. Covers every American 65 and older. It is horrors. It's a single-payer health insurance system run by the federal government. When it was being proposed, people said it would be terrible. Well, it's become as American as apple pie. Famous quote among in the healthcare field is the constituent who accosted Senator John Breaux saying, "Senator, don't let the government get its hands on Medicare." The fact of the matter is we have universal health coverage for our elderly already. The other thing that people say is that it would be impossibly expensive. Little known, other big secret. In this country, the government already pays more health care bills than private insurers do. The reason is that we already cover the expensive cases. We already have the expensive cases, the elderly, the very sick who end up being bankrupted and therefore end up poor enough to get Medicaid are covered by public programs. What's left are generally lower income working adults, and we pay an enormous amount to not cover them. The fact of the matter is that our healthcare system is wildly inefficient, largely because we have an insurance industry that devotes enormous resources to trying to identify who really needs health insurance so as not to give it to them.
Paul Krugman, thank you very much. Speaking against the motion, John Stossel, my colleague from ABC News, But we did not discuss this ahead of time. In fact, though both of us have worked a quarter century at ABC News, we've never met until tonight. John Stossel's hard-nosed take on many a liberal policy assumption is summed up in his catchphrase, "Give me a break." Tonight, in a sense, we're discussing what if you break your arm or your neck? Should the federal government be there to provide your insurance safety net? John Stossel here to argue against that idea and the motion tonight.
It is intuitive to think that it should, that we have very poor and helpless people, and it's the job of government to help them. And actually, we have that. We have Medicaid. If you are poor, you are covered in America. It's not a good system. It's tempting to think that a wise government could step in. And Paul Krugman has just said, look at Medicare. People like Medicare. And that's true. But of course they like it because it gives you stuff free. People like that. But it's unsustainable. It's $35 trillion in the hole. That's the unfunded liability of Medicare. Now, many people say that the perfect system is in Europe, where you have universal health care. And it's true. Most other countries do have systems like that. And it gets rid of the horrible anxiety that some people have in America. Will I be covered? But it's better to be anxious than to be in horrible pain or to be dead. And these universal coverage systems, they don't guarantee universal access to actual care. In Canada, more than 1 million families can't get a doctor. There aren't enough doctors to go around. In Britain, 1 in 8 patients waits more than a year for treatment in a hospital. Now, why does this happen? Well, because when everything is free, when the government pays for it, everybody wants everything. But the government doesn't have infinite money, so the government then must ration. Still, despite the fact they spend less, European care is not remarkably inferior. It's pretty good for most people. But that's true only because they freeload off of us, because most of the innovation comes from America, from the greedy, profit-driven companies that want to take as much money from you as they possibly can. They're the ones who gave us so much good stuff, the MRIs, the CT scans, the statins like Lipitor to reduce cholesterol, coronary bypass surgery, hip replacement, knee replacement. What will the world be like if we have universal care and we don't have America to invent those things? Yes, the private market is awful in many ways and wasteful. It is intuitive to think a single payer would be more efficient. And I used to believe that when I attended Paul Krugman's university. I was taught that the wise elites in Washington and state capital can plan these things better than these competing companies. But then I became a consumer reporter, and I watched the market work. And now I say that's nonsense. Government can't do anything even close to the efficient way that private companies do it. When government pays for things, people don't change. They don't innovate. They keep doing the same thing they did to get paid. So as an example, look at the inefficiency of the private car companies. They waste millions on advertising in my program. I'm glad they do. They have these competing dealerships and pushy salesmen selling things like rust-proofing that we don't need. Despite all of that, the worst you can get is better than this. This is what universal coverage gives us. And I apologize to those of you on the radio. You can't see I'm holding up a picture of the Trabant, that East German car. This was the best those brilliant East German engineers could produce. It was an awful car. You had to put the oil and gas in separately and shake the car to mix them together. As soon as the Berlin Wall went down, this disappeared because it couldn't compete with the mediocre products that were produced by our competing companies. I don't want to have this kind of health care.
Thank you, John Stossel. We have a Canadian in the House tonight, Michael Raklis. Michael Raklis is a physician who has lived on the other side of the U.S.-Canada border. He trained in Canada. He practices medicine there. He is a health policy expert there. And given that Canada so often is the example cited as for why universal coverage is the solution or why universal coverage is the problem, we are pleased to have Michael Raklis standing at our podium to argue for the motion, universal health coverage should be the federal government's responsibility. Michael.
Thank you very much, John. Now, as Paul has said, that this is very much a question of values. And it's actually a case where you can have your cake and eat it too. In fact, you can only eat your cake if you have it. In other words, you can only get cost control if you have equity. The U.S. system costs the most in the world. It denies care to tens of millions of Americans, and I have seen that personally. And the international performance and quality is just so-so. We actually get more of most services than Americans do. We have more visits to doctors every year, more days in hospital, more days in nursing homes. We take more prescription drugs than you do. And that far from lacking innovation, we're the country that brought you insulin. We developed bone marrow transplantation. And all of this costs way less, 10% of our GDP compared to 16% in your country. How does that happen? Well, half of the extra expense is administration because of the extra expense of this multiple-payer system. The other half is due to higher prices because you don't have effective cost control because you don't have a single payer. Now, this must cost us a fortune. We must be basket cases. The Canadian federal government has run surpluses equal to 1% to 2% of our GDP for 11 years in a row. You'd imagine Canadians are dying in the street waiting for medical care. In fact, we now live 3 years longer on average than you do. This is over a 50-year period. We've now got a three-year longer life expectancy. Our infant mortality rates are 20% to 30% lower than yours. So Canada has done well, but Canada is not the outlier. Canada is the outlier in North America. Around the world, wealthy countries, all wealthy countries that Americans would think of when they would think of other countries they could live in, all other countries have a mainly public system. So it comes back to values. If you focus on equity, you get a bonus. You get cost control. If you focus on cost control, you don't get equity or cost control. And I strongly encourage you folks to vote for our side. Thank you.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. I am John Donvan, and this is Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating. We have six panelists for and against the motion. The motion in this debate is universal health coverage should be the federal government's responsibility. We are halfway through the opening statements at this point, halfway to our Q&A section, but I'd now like to introduce, arguing against the motion, Sally Pipes, author of The Top 10 Myths of American Healthcare, A Citizen's Guide. She is president and chief executive officer of the Pacific Research Institute, a think tank based in California. She also comes from Canada. But not only does she argue against this motion, 2 years ago she completed a personal journey and became a citizen of the United States. Sally Pipes.
I do think that everyone here would agree that the key goal for America is affordable, accessible, quality health care. The question is, how do we achieve that goal? There are two competing visions for health care reform in this country today. One focuses on government, mandates, and taxes, while the other focuses on free markets, innovation, and empowering consumers. The long-term goal of most liberals is a Canadian-style, single-payer, Medicare-for-all healthcare system. They also cite life expectancy and infant mortality as evidence of the superiority of these systems. Well, let's look at life expectancy. People who make this claim usually note that life expectancy is higher in Canada and Europe. The World Health Organization ranking does not measure, though, the quality of a healthcare system. The World Health Organization ranks systems that treat people equally higher than those that treat people well. Now let's look at infant mortality. The reality is that the United States, with its superior neonatal care facilities, has allowed more high-risk babies to live. But this also pushes the infant mortality rate higher because of a greater number of at-risk births, babies being born. And in other countries, many of those at-risk babies do not live and are not counted in infant mortality statistics. Now let's look at adult cancer survival rates. A study published in the August issue of the British journal Lancet Oncology said that America is much better at treating cancer than Europe or Canada. Researchers found that Americans have a better survival rate for 13 of the 16 most prominent cancers. Breast cancer survival rate among American women is 83.5%, whereas in Britain, 70%. American men and women are 35% more likely to survive colon cancer than their British counterparts. Now, I have discussed the data, but let's look at the reality of universal coverage systems in Canada and Europe. Michael Moore, in his movie Sicko, where I have a cameo appearance, points to the wonderful healthcare systems in Canada, France, England, and Cuba, and he says they're all free. The U.S. does spend, as has been pointed out, 16% of its gross domestic product on healthcare, while Canada spends in the range of 10 to 11%. The reason that Canada spends 10 to 11% is because the government sets a global budget and says that's what we're spending. And what is the result? Long waiting lists for care, ration care, and a lack of access to the latest technological equipment. Today in Canada, there are 827,000 Canadians waiting on a waiting list for procedures. The average wait in 2007 from seeing a primary care doctor to getting treatment by a specialist was 18.3 weeks. That's over 4 months. As my friend in Vancouver, Dr. Brian Day, orthopedic surgeon and head of the CMA, Canadian Medical Association, told the New York Times, Canada is a country in which your dog can get a hip replacement in under a week and in which humans wait 2 to 3 years. Is this the kind of government-run healthcare system Americans desire? Think about the post office. Think about the DMV and the handling of Katrina.
Thank you, Sally Pipes. Striding to the lecture now is Art Kellerman, who is at the ER at Grady Memorial Hospital, Atlanta's public hospital. He's also a professor of emergency medicine at Emory. And given that, as we know, so often the solution that the uninsured come to when they need medical care is to go to an emergency room, it is extremely valuable to us to have on the panel somebody who is at the receiving end of that process. I give you Art Kellerman.
Thank you. I am just an ER doc, and I don't have the distinguished background of my fellow panelists, but I have treated thousands of patients, insured and uninsured. And I've also broken bad news to hundreds of families. I want to tell you about one of them that I'll never forget. It took them 2 hours to reach Atlanta from the North Georgia mountains. I faced them across the outstretched body of their son. I spoke first. Your son was in a terrible crash, I said. The ambulance crew could tell he was severely injured and called a helicopter. He reached us about 3 hours ago. He has several injuries, a collapsed lung, internal bleeding, but these aren't his most serious problem. His brain injury worries us the most. That's when his mother interrupted me. She said, Doctor, I don't know how to ask you this, but I must. My husband lost his job 6 weeks ago. I work, but my employer doesn't offer health insurance. Is my son going to get the care he needs? Momentarily taken aback, I replied, Ma'am, you're at Grady Hospital, one of the finest trauma centers in the South. I swear to you, we will do everything in our power to save your son. I meant what I said that night, but I didn't tell her the whole truth. I didn't tell her that our best probably wouldn't be good enough, and that if her son survived, he'd probably be disabled for the rest of his life. I didn't tell her that she and her husband would be billed for the helicopter flight and the days or weeks to come in the intensive care unit, and that the total would probably reach $100,000, maybe a whole lot more. I didn't tell her that she and her husband would empty their savings and mortgage their home in an effort to pay the bill, and it wouldn't be enough, and that the coins put in a coffee can at the local diner wouldn't come close to covering the difference. I didn't tell her that the unpaid balance of her son's bill will push Grady Hospital closer to insolvency, closer to its own crash. And if Grady closes, North Georgia, a region of more than 5 million people, will lose its only level one trauma center, its only poison control center, its only emergency psychiatric unit, and 750 inpatient beds. The other side of this debate will try to convince you that rising health care costs are due to government interference. Well, they've got it backwards. The problem is not government interference with the health care industry. The problem today is health care industry interference with government. That's why the business of medicine is booming. Record profits, huge executive salaries, bonuses, health care costs spiraling out of control year after year after year. But the caring side of medicine is failing. On the front lines, doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals are nearly as frustrated as you are. Country music star Dolly Parton once quipped, "You have no idea how much it costs to look this cheap." The same can be said about American healthcare. You have no idea how much it costs to run this poorly. My side has given you several reasons to vote for tonight's resolution. But the most compelling one of all is your own self-interest. Because a healthcare system that doesn't work for everyone may not work for you when the chips are down. Take it from me, an ER doc. No one can predict when a life-threatening emergency may strike. But if it does, you'll want your doctor to go the extra mile, not your ambulance.
Thank you, Art Kellerman. Our final speaker speaking against the motion is Michael Cannon. He is the director of health policy studies at the Cato Institute, which is the nation's leading think tank formed around the philosophy of libertarianism, which can very crudely and primitively, simplistically be summed up as live and let live. But I suppose the question is, do you need insurance to follow through on that? Michael is arguing against, broadly and firmly against, the notion of universal health coverage being the responsibility of the federal government. Michael.
So you've heard a lot of things about how wonderful universal coverage will be. So let's look at a couple of the actual likely effects of adopting universal coverage here in the United States. First off, it's not going to save us money. Yes, other countries do universal coverage, and they do it on the cheap, or they do it for less money than we do. But there's absolutely no way that can happen in the United States. And here's why. Expanding insurance coverage means more people are going to go to the doctor, more people are going to use medical services. That costs more money. The Urban Institute estimates that it would cost at least $120 billion. Now, with the government in control, it's tempting to think that we'd be able to ratchet that spending down over time so that we're more in line with other nations. But with the government in control of the whatever universal coverage scheme you can dream up, the industry is going to prevent the government from doing just that. So although it's tempting to think that we could do health, universal coverage and we could save money on it in the process, we would have an easier time moving the uninsured to Switzerland than we would have moving Switzerland's spending levels here to the United States. Now, you've also heard that universal coverage would improve the quality of care. We actually have some pretty systemic problems when it comes to quality here in the United States. I'm not a big proponent of the U.S. healthcare sector. One big quality problem is that we have alarming rates of medical error here in the United States. Universal coverage is not going to help to prevent these medical errors. It's not going to help nurses read doctors' chicken scratchings and avoid the errors associated with those. It's not going to encourage physicians and other clinicians to wash their hands between patients so they're not passing on infections. Nor is it going to prevent errors by encouraging doctors to follow standardized protocols when inserting a central line. All universal coverage is going to do is bring more people into that broken system. It's not going to do anything to fix that system. Now, it's true, universal coverage may save some lives. It may save this one life over here. So that seems to be something in its favor. But actually here, the news isn't even all that good. Because health economists tell us that if you have a dollar to spend on improving health, there's absolutely no evidence that spending that dollar on universal coverage is going to get you more of an improvement in health than spending that dollar on any number of other things, including clinics, reducing medical errors, improving nutrition, fighting poverty, or even improving education. So ironically, to vote for universal coverage does not show how much you care about your neighbor's health. It actually shows how little you care about your neighbor's health, because you're willing to forgo the added health benefits that might come from from spending that dollar on some of those other strategies.
Thank you, Michael Cannon. Well, you've now heard all of the opening statements, and we're at the point of being able to share with you the poll results we took among you, the audience, when you first arrived. Before the debate began, 49% of you were for the motion, 24% against, 27% undecided. John Stossel, Art Kellerman suggested that there's a conflict between keeping people healthy and making money keeping people healthy. What about that?
There are conflicts always in making a profit and delivering service to your customers. You get rich if you service your customers well. The hospital that keeps people healthiest gets a reputation for doing a good job. That's how capitalism works. You get rich by doing well.
But I heard you also argue that you feel that there would be much less innovation in the U.S. system if there were not the profit motive behind development.
Totally. We take the benefits of the profit motive for granted all the time. The fact that I can go to a foreign country, stick a piece of plastic in the wall, and cash will come out. And I can give that card to a total stranger who doesn't even speak English, and he'll rent me a car for the week. And when I get home, Visa or MasterCard will have the accounting correct to the penny. But the government can't even count the votes accurately. And yet our instinct is to go to government.
Art Kellerman? We had a lot of talking about cars earlier, and I think everybody's familiar with the economic problems that GM is having right now. And actually, I think GM's cars are better than Trevon's. But they're carrying about $5 billion a year in healthcare costs. Several years ago, the CEO of GM testified before Congress and said $2 billion out of their bottom line every year was just for drugs. Now, meanwhile, Pfizer, the second largest pharmaceutical company in the United States, last year reported $19 billion in profit, 37% profit margin. I'm a big believer in market economics, too, but I don't want our auto industry to end up in Ontario. I'd like to keep a lot of it in Michigan. So I don't understand. I mean, I do think profit is good, but I think when one industry can basically drive another one into the ground and harm our country, regulation is out of whack. And let me just one other point. The FDA cannot take the cost of a drug into consideration when it approves a new drug. It just has to be better than nothing. That's not by accident. Congress prohibits the FDA from considering cost effectiveness in new drugs. That's not the case in UK. It's not the case in other countries. It should not be the case here.
Paul Krugman, I'll come to you in just a moment. Michael Cannon, against
precisely for the reason you raised earlier, Art, is that the industry has way too much influence when the government gets involved. And it's nice to think that we could have this wonderful universal coverage plan and we could just get the industry out of it. We could just not have the industry be a part of it. We could cut off their influence. But we know that the industry is always going to be around. We know that there will always be drug companies and greedy private health insurance companies and Republicans who will mess things up like they messed up FEMA and they mess up everything else. So you can't say that universal coverage is this wonderful idea and we can separate out this part. This is an inherent part. Unless you have a plan to abolish Republicans, they're part of your plan.
Paul Krugman,
that came wonderfully into exactly what I was going to say. We have had Katrina used as an example, and I thought to myself, as I always do, it must be wonderful to be a conservative because you can take control of the government, make a mess of things, and say, see, that proves my point. Isn't that wonderful? And I would also add, Medicare has its problems, but has continued to function. If we have a well-established system, it continues. Social Security is a system that's working with high efficiency. The point is to get this thing. It is. If you have pay any attention, it works fine.
If you pay any attention to Medicare, you have to know that one-third of the money spent is wasted, that it rewards doctors for medical errors.
And private insurance?
Let's bring Sally Pipes into the conversation. She is against the motion.
I just wanted to talk a little bit about Medicare. Remember when, in 1965, when Medicare and Medicaid came in, and the cost was about $3 billion, and it was projected to cost $12 billion in 1990. Well, in fact, it cost $107 billion. Last year, it cost $427 billion. It's estimated in 2017 to cost $884 billion. The Medicare trustees say the program will be broke in 2019. There is no cost control in Medicare. It's completely out of control. The recent Congressional Commission said that one in three Medicare patients is having a very hard time getting a doctor. And I have talked to many seniors who are having a hard time getting a doctor under Medicare.
Art Kellerman, our ER man.
First of all, I heard some real interesting comments made from the other side of it, and I just want to say, y'all can't make stuff up because none of you are running for president. Second thing, Sally, you mentioned about Medicare. You know, we've had a recent experiment with private health plan efficiency. Private health plans have started administering Medicare. They're getting paid an average of 12% more per enrollee. That's nearly $1,000 more per person than traditional Medicare administers the same program. This is going to add $8.5 billion to the cost of Medicare this year in 2008. And since 2004, those plans will have sucked an extra $33 billion out of Medicare Trust Fund without improving the care of beneficiaries. So, again, Michael, I think you're right. We got a lot of people that have gotten their hands around the federal till and have made federal government a cash cow. I think federal government needs to be a watchdog.
I want to agree with
this is Michael Cannon.
I don't think that we do any better in terms of health outcomes here in the United States. But those things don't get you where you think they do. The fact that private insurance companies are ripping off the taxpayers through Medicare is problematic. But the alternative is to let the doctors in the hospitals do that, because they're the ones who've been doing that for the first 40 years.
I want to say one other thing.
And no, I'm not done yet. So, and the fact that we don't lead the, I don't think we lead the world in terms of health outcomes, but that just means that we're doing poorly, other nations are doing poorly, no one is innovating in order to make those improvements in medical errors, except, you know, we got the Kaisers and the group healths out there that are actually doing this, and you just made an argument against having them participate in Medicare. You're trying to keep those innovations out of a government program.
I'm John Donvan, and this is Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating in the United States. Paul Krugman for the motion.
I just want to break one more thing. We've been talking a lot about quality of care, but there's one other thing that is very important, which is the financial ruin that often comes from medical expenses. And that is preventable, and that's only in America. The individual who is the family that's financially ruined, even every time I look at one of the studies that says, well, we can't show that providing health insurance makes that much difference in health outcomes, first of all, I don't quite believe it, but secondly, there is a tremendous difference in terms of not the medical side, but the economic side. And this is something, again, there's a risk, a fear, a terror of medical expenses, which happens among wealthy countries only in America.
I'm glad, Professor Krugman, that you're letting some economics creep into your remarks tonight. I want to point out, though, that the AARP recently released a study that showed that bankruptcy rates are rising fastest among those people who are covered by our only universal coverage program. Not only are they rising faster among that group than for other groups, but for other groups, those bankruptcy rates are falling. How is that consistent with what you said about universal coverage protecting us
but
from financial ruin?
No, I'm not talking about bankruptcy rates. I'm talking about all kinds of things.
Well, give me another measure of financial ruin.
The elderly?
Give me another measure of financial ruin.
Hold your response to that. Perhaps you're summing up at the 2 minutes, because we do want to go to the audience. And gentlemen on the right.
So basically, like, what I can't wrap my brain around is, how can a system based on companies that make a profit on denying our care be made responsible for paying for our care?
John Stossel.
Well, you're right. The insurance companies have a conflict, and the insurance company has to balance. They want to pay for nothing. They hope none of you ever get sick, and if you get sick, they don't want to pay. But, of course, if they do that, word gets out, and they don't get any new customers. So that's how they have to balance that.
Actually, can I just do – I wanted to ask a question. And
please,
I think it's a good time.
Ahead.
I wanted to ask actually two questions to the audience. First, how many Canadians – would Canadians in the room please raise your hands?
We have about
okay,
seven hands.
Okay, not as many
up.
As I thought. Okay, of those of you who are not on the panel who are Canadians, how many of you think you have a terrible healthcare system?
We One, see two, almost all of the same hands going up.
Bad move on my part. I've got a selected... all right, I won't try.
Thank you, Paul Krugman. Art Kellerman.
Yeah, there have been so many points out here that I wish we could address. One I want to talk about is waiting times, because you hear that all the time. The waiting times that matter are the waiting times for things like when you go to the ER and how quickly you see a doctor for a heart attack. Whether or not, if you've got acute or worrisome symptoms, you can see your doctor that day or the next day, or you end up having to be in an ER. We're turning away one ambulance per minute in this country from overcrowded private as well as public hospitals in the United States. If you got to limp around for 2 months on a bum knee until you get a new titanium knee, I'm sorry. That's not going to kill you. You don't get to me for 30 or 45 minutes because you've been diverted from three hospitals. You're going to die. That's the wait and times that we need to worry about in the United States, and it's not going to happen if we ignore this problem.
Michael Cannon against the motion.
The leading researcher in the country on insurance markets, specifically the individual market where you buy insurance directly, is a man named Mark Paul. He's at the University of Pennsylvania. And what he's found after researching what actually happens in insurance markets is he's found that those laws reduce the community rating laws that Professor Krugman favors reduce the number of people with health insurance, and they don't provide health insurance to many more sick people. And the reason is that that unregulated markets really do a remarkably good job of providing health insurance to people with expensive chronic conditions, provided they purchase health insurance while they're still healthy.
Michael Rackless.
In all this talk about healthcare with traditional economic models, that is one of the main reasons why you folks have not been able to make progress, is using traditional marketplace models focused on that as your ideology to analyze healthcare, which is not in any way close to being a traditional economic market, and to apply some sort of economic language, the way we're hearing from the other side, to a system which is where the supply side is massively regulated for good reasons. You know, do you want to be able to, you're going to have to look up every single provider that you see to find out, you know, whether or not they pass their licensing exams or not?
Sally, perhaps you look, you're dying to say something.
I'm just dying to say that, you know, we got a lot of the mess that we're in this country, including part of the 46 million, is because the federal government gave employers a tax advantage to provide health insurance. And as a result, people in America, 60% of people in America, get their health insurance through their employer. If you lose your job or you quit your job, we don't have portable health insurance. We really need to focus on growing the individual market so that people can buy insurance across state lines, people can get the type of insurance that fits their needs. We can grow the individual insurance market because competition will work. We can open up this market and cover a lot of those people because of the 46 million uninsured, 17 million earn over $50,000 a year, and 10 million earn over $75,000. A lot are young, they're healthy, and they don't want to pay $4,000 a year for insurance to cover things that they don't need to care for.
Many of those folks have illnesses, and they cannot get insurance no matter how much money they pay.
But if we opened up the market, new competitors would come into the market, they would be based on competition.
Healthcare is not a market.
Time out.
Well, it's not a right. It's not a right.
Time is up for this section. I want to remind you, just before we move to the summing up section in which each of the panelists will have 2 minutes, I want to remind you of how you voted when you came in. Before the debate, 49% of you agreed with the proposition that universal health coverage should be the federal government's responsibility. 24% of you were against that motion, and 27% were undecided. In the next 10 to 12 minutes, you will hear a summing up, and then we will vote one further time. And our first panelist, John Stossel.
If you think health care is expensive now, wait till you see how expensive it is when it's free. When it's free, there are no controls. I don't think this side is saying the American system is a good system. It's not a market. We're spending other people's money. Government is already involved, spending about half the money. Third parties pay for 7 out of every $8. This is an awful way to pay for things. Think how it would work if you're car insurance worked that way. If they paid for your gas and your oil, you wouldn't care what gas costs, and people would sell you $100 oil changes. That's what's going on in healthcare under insurance companies paying or the government. And employment-based insurance makes no sense when 4 out of 10 Americans change jobs now every year. Government is not the answer. We don't have government steel mills or government airlines anymore because they were awful. And once they had competition, they went out of business. Michael says medicine's different, but every profession says that. The truth is, it's true. You're not an expert. You don't know which doctor's the best, but you don't know which car is best. You're not car engineers, but through word of mouth, the good news spreads. The bad companies go out of business. The good doctors will take over. And we see this now where there is a market, the tiny places like cosmetic surgery, LASIK eye surgery. The doctors give you their email addresses. Does your doctor do that? They give out their cell phone numbers. The waiting rooms are nice. And the prices are going down while the quality is going up. The post office can never give us what FedEx can.
John Stossel speaking against the motion. Speaking for the motion in his summary, Paul Krugman.
Government health care is imperfect. Actually, government health care is not the issue. Government insurance is imperfect. So is private insurance. There are horror stories. The nature of health care is that lots of bad things happen. You don't generally seek health care because you're feeling great. But We have extensive experience. We have Medicare, which is a system that is flawed but has actually shown slower cost inflation than private health insurance over the past 40 years. We have the Veterans Health Administration, which is our little island of true socialized medicine in the United States and does very well. And above all, what we have is a system right now. Remember what the proposition is. The motion is that the federal government should guarantee health care. Not that the government should run everything, not that everything should be under government control, but whether there should be a federal guarantee of health care for everybody. And that, I think, is something that American values, that our fundamental morality says is something we should be doing.
Thank you, Paul Krugman. In making her two-minute summary against the motion, Sally Pipes.
Although it would be nice if the federal government could solve all of our health care challenges, current events both at home and abroad show that it cannot. As a Canadian, I watched firsthand the promise of free health care, and I saw it devolve into the reality of a high tax bill and long lines for advanced care. As waiting lists grew over the years to more than 4 months in 2007, an increasing number of Canadians have traveled to the United States for treatment and paid out of pocket, whether it's Mayo's, the Cleveland Clinic, or UCSF system. The number of illegal private clinics in Canada has grown significantly over the last few years. The government is afraid to shut them down, even though private health care is illegal in Canada, for fear of an immense outcry. In June 2005, the Canadian Supreme Court ruled in a monumental decision that the ban on private health care in Quebec is illegal. Quebecers are entitled to life, liberty, and the security of the person. Long waiting lists do not give you that security. Claude Castonguay, chair of a Quebec Royal Commission on Health Care in the 1960s, recommended that Quebec adopt government health care. The Quebec government followed his advice, and they called him the father of Quebec Medicare, just like Tommy Douglas, the father of Medicare. This year, he released a report, an official government report, evaluating Quebec's ailing health care system. His conclusion, it's in crisis. He now urges legalization of private health insurance. Americans believe in freedom and personal responsibility, not big government. They don't want big government controlling our lives. The question is, who do you want to control your health care decisions? An HMO bureaucrat, a government bureaucrat, or you yourself?
We're next going to hear from Michael Rackless. Michael Rackless is a physician and health policy analyst, the author of Prescription for Excellence, How Innovation is Saving Canada's Health Care System. Michael, your 2 minutes begin now.
Yes, I want to mention that the waiting list issue, I mentioned that it is a problem in Canada, but other countries with universal systems don't have waiting list problems. It is not a problem of universal coverage. And in fact, in Toronto right now, because of public response to the concerns about waiting lists, if you need cataract surgery, if you need your knee replaced, if you need a hip replaced, phone one number. You can be seen in an assessment clinic within 1 week usually, and you can get your surgery within a month after that. And it doesn't cost you any money directly because you pay it in your taxes. And the taxes in Canada as a share of GDP are almost as low as they are in the United States, and we've had surpluses for 11 years. I think what you're hearing from the other side are a whole series of anecdotes, and yet the overall research indicates that every other wealthy country in the world where you would feel comfortable visiting and living has universal system. And I think what you really have to watch out for is what the New Yorker commented on April 20th, 1992, referring to then the first President Bush. The compulsion that drives President Bush to distort the facts about Canadian health care suggests that official American policy is in the process of becoming what conservatives in discussing the Soviet Union used to call a total ideology, a system blindly convinced of its absolute truth and yet so fragile in its relationship to reality that it is incapable of considering even the most obvious reform. Surely we should have learned by now what happens to ideological systems that begin to deny facts that their people can discover for themselves just by crossing a border.
Michael Rackless summing up for the proposition. Summing up against the proposition, Michael Cannon, co-author of Healthy Competition, What's Holding Back Healthcare and How to Free It. He is the Cato Institute's Director of Health Policy Studies. Michael?
At the reception before we came in here, I was standing across from a man who was reading his program, and when he came to the part with my picture on it, he looked at the picture, he looked up at me, and he said, "Hey, that's you. You're against universal coverage?" Because I think, and this look came over his face, the question that was forming was something like, what kind of a moral reprobate could be against universal health insurance coverage? And I know that I have a lot of family here tonight who are asking themselves the same question. My opposition stems from two beliefs. One is that people should have the right to choose their doctor, they should have the right to choose their health plan, and those things are often lost in systems of universal coverage, almost uniformly. No, I think totally lost. And second, universal coverage is not going to make us healthier. We have serious problems here in the United States with rising costs, with low quality care, and we have health plans in the private sector that are trying to innovate with ways to reduce those costs and to improve the quality of care. The only problem is you can't choose them because the government has said you can't. You can have a healthcare sector that guarantees universal coverage, or you can have a healthcare sector that continuously makes medical care better, cheaper, and safer, making it easier to deliver on that moral obligation that we have to help the less fortunate among us. You cannot have both.
Thank you, Michael Cannon. Art Kellerman is an ER doctor at Grady Memorial Hospital in Atlanta and a professor at Emory. Summing up, for the motion, universal health coverage should be the federal government's responsibility, Dr. Art Kellerman.
Have you all heard the expression that there are no atheists in foxholes? I can tell you, in my experience, there are no libertarians in intensive care units. It's widely said that Americans can pick their doctor. The fact of the matter is, if you're in a non-group plan or you're in a plan that doesn't contract with these doctors over here, but you can over here, every day I see patients whose care is disrupted because their plan has shifted doctors, they didn't get the deal they wanted. We've surrendered an enormous amount of freedom in this country to the private insurance industry and to the rest of the industry. We can collectively together do better. In just a few moments, you're going to vote again. And the six of us care a lot about how that vote turns out. But that's really not the vote that matters. The vote that matters is coming up on November the 4th. And I encourage every one of you to do your homework and do your homework on the candidates' positions on health care, because they are strikingly different and they, to some degree, break down along the lines of the debate tonight. And it should make a difference in the choice that you make then as well as the choice you make tonight. I want to close by going back to the bedside of that family. I didn't tell that mother the whole truth that night. But by staying silent and withholding the truth, I left her with something we both needed, which is hope. Hope that her son would beat the odds. Sometimes we see young people come back from catastrophic injuries and do okay. And most important, hope that this great nation of ours, the United States of America, will soon finally do the right thing and cover the uninsured, so no mother need ever ask again, will my son get the care he needs? Please vote for tonight's resolution.
And now to the results. Question of who won the room. Before the debate, 49% were for the motion, 24% were against, 27% were undecided. Now, after the debate, after hearing the arguments and voting, 58% of you are for the motion, 34% against, 8% undecided. Thank you very much, everyone, for joining us this evening. I'm John Donvan, your host and moderator, and the applause you hear was actually for both sides in this debate because in terms of sheer numbers, the majority of the audience came into the debate supporting the side for the motion, and that was true afterwards. However, in terms of persuasion, the side against the motion managed to change more minds throughout the evening. Their support went up 10%. While the side for the proposition went up 9%. A mere 1% difference. So congratulations to both sides. This Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, presented by the Rosenkranz Foundation, was held on the campus of the Rockefeller University. Robert Rosenkranz is chairman, Dana Wolf is executive producer, Maureen McMurray, radio producer, Damon Whitmore, audio engineer. And I'm your host, John Donvan. For more information or to purchase tickets to future events, visit www.iq2us.org. That's IQ, the number 2, US.org. Our debate next time, America is finally winning the war in Iraq. Intelligence Squared is distributed by NPR, National Public Radio.